in number 16-1526. CF, is it Crespi? Is that the...
Correct, Crespi.
Crespi, like critters, right? Silicon against Silicon Labs. Whenever you're ready, Mr. Smith.
Correct. May it please the court, we had reserved 2 minutes for rebuttal. We ask the court to reverse the board's decision in this case because it improperly construed the term input RF signal in the 585 patent, and as a result of that improper construction, it resulted in improperly interpreting the prior art that it was under consideration. The board improperly construed the input RF signal because it relied on a dictionary definition of just the term RF, radio frequency, and it ignored, in our view, the intrinsic record that supported an alternative construction that was actually consistent with the claims and the specification.
Didn't you also have extrinsic evidence that you relied on?
We had extrinsic evidence in the form of an expert declaration. So we had that. We did not put forward a separate dictionary definition for the term RF. Our view was that the term input RF signal should be construed as a unitary term as a whole, as opposed to doing what the board did, which is it didn't interpret the words input or signal, and it just went right to the dictionary and said, what does RF mean, and then gave a broad range of frequencies for RF. We submit that that type of construction is wrong because not only does it go against the claim construction principles that we've been taught for years, that you start with the intrinsic record and look at that record. And when we presented that record to the board said, our construction is not without appeal, meaning that we actually had some merit to the construction we were proposing because our construction is based on the intrinsic record, but then discounted it by saying there was one reference in a figure that instead of saying input RF signal, said input signal, and in parentheses, RF. And based on that one site, said that all of the intrinsic evidence that we cited to that talks about an input RF signal and what we think consistently supports the patent owner's construction was all not considered as part of the construction.
Can you help me just understand what it means to say it's received at the receiver prior to processing? I mean, it can't mean prior to the processing that takes place after it's received, because definitionally it can't be processed by the thing that it's coming into until it's in there. So you think that it means there has never been any processing of that signal before it arrives?
So our contention is that we're talking about a raw signal coming in, like a satellite signal, a terrestrial signal, a cable signal. That is what the 585 patent is trying to accomplish here, that you're taking this raw signal coming
well,
in.
Raw isn't it, in my hearing, making it any clearer. I mean, I'm struggling to understand what it either raw means or without processing means. Something created that signal, and I mean,
right.
It didn't spring without somebody processing something. So I'm trying to understand what this means.
Right. When we refer to processing, we're referring to the fact that there are these frequency conversion circuits. And so what's happening in the 585 patent is you take in what we're referring to as this external signal, and you begin the process of processing it in order to get it to the point where you could show it on a TV. And so you start with a external signal, such as what's getting beamed down by the satellite or what's coming in through the cable transmission. Then you have to go through a sequence of changes, and it's that sequence of changes that we think is important here, because the patent is very clear that there's a difference in the terminology that the claim and the specification is using. On the one hand, they talk about an input RF signal, which we say is an external signal that hasn't been processed by the circuitry at all. And then you have an intermediate frequency signal, something that has been processed, something that has been converted. And as a result of this change, there needs to be a distinction in the claims in terms of what do these two terms mean. The input RF signal is different from the intermediate signal. They are two different terms and should be interpreted differently as a result. However, the board in its construction doesn't have a distinguishing construction. Instead, its construction of input RF signal is so unreasonably broad, it encompasses every RF signal that's described in the patent, including an intermediate frequency signal. So there's no distinction as a result of the board's construction between an input RF signal and the intermediate frequency signal. And we submit that as a result, that can't be the right construction. These two terms were used very clearly in the specification and in the claims to mean different things. And we think that our construction, which the board found to be not without appeal, is actually supported pretty well by the intrinsic record and the specification. The independent claims talk about the input signal coming into the tuner and then being converted to a different intermediate frequency signal. And
what in the patent specification talks about the lack of preprocessing?
So the words preprocessing do not appear in terms of a reference to just the fact that that signal is preprocessed. The use of preprocessing we take from the fact that the specification clearly talks about the input RF signal being a signal such as a terrestrial signal or a cable transmission, meaning these are signals that would be coming in where they hadn't been processed by a frequency conversion.
It doesn't say specifically that they shouldn't be or cannot be, right?
Well, I think that it does in the sense that one of the advantages that the 585 patent provides in the specification is it says it can take in signals in any manner, and it talks about the fact that specifically it can take in these terrestrial signals and satellite signals, and those are examples of the signals that are coming in that aren't requiring something else to filter them or to change the frequency of them. This is unlike some of the prior art that's been relied upon in this case, where you see prior to the 585 patent, people having this external hardware.
That's one of the problems I'm having with your claim construction, is it feels like it's driven by the prior art and avoiding it, as opposed to the actual specification that doesn't say anything about processing, preprocessing or not preprocessing.
I think that the distinction becomes clear when you try to interpret input RF signal and the signal that is the intermediate frequency signal. I mean, those are different. One is clearly processed because the intermediate frequency signal is the one that goes through the conversion that takes place, whereas the input RF signal is not. And every reference to the input RF signal in the specification is referring to examples of signals that are external that have not been processed. And so I think the specification actually is fairly clear that what we're talking about is bringing in this external signal, then doing the conversion, and then you get to an intermediate frequency signal. And so I think the specification actually is much clearer than Apelli would suggest it to mean, because there is a clear distinction between these two signals. And the only way to make sense of that distinction is to make sure that how they're construed reflects the fact that they are different signals, meaning one is going through a conversion, the other has not gone through a conversion. The other one has come in from this terrestrial source and now is coming into the circuitry for purposes of being converted and ultimately demodulated so that a TV can actually display it. The dependent claims also support our construction, because the dependent claims talk about the fact that the input RF signal comprise RF signals received from terrestrial broadcast, satellite broadcast, and cable transmission. Here again, the dependent claims can be looked at as a guide to understanding what the input RF signal is. And here it's explicitly indicating that they're coming from an external source and that these are signals, the terrestrial, satellite, and cable.
External to what?
External to the circuitry that the 585 patent is trying to accomplish, meaning the receiver that is going to then start the conversion process.
And I don't remember this, so forgive me if I'm just way off base, but once the board got past the claim construction, the prior art that the board relied on essentially looked inside some box and said that there is receiving over here with something coming in, but all within the box, or something
That's pretty close, Your Honor. So they rely, after they get through with the claim construction, they then take that broad construction and say, if you look at the Thompson reference, which I believe is the one you're referring to, the Thompson reference, although it says you've got this satellite signal, so what we're calling an external signal, satellite signal coming in, and then there's something that they claim is then converting that signal into an intermediate frequency signal, and then bringing that intermediate frequency signal into the structure that Thompson is describing as their invention. And so the conversion is happening sort of outside of view of their invention, meaning the conversion of that satellite signal is happening outside of it in some, they call it an outside source. But the reason that they do it is Thompson isn't concerned about having a unit that can bring in these external signals and be able to take care of them all in one place. They're only concerned about what happens after this conversion has taken place. And Thompson recognizes that they couldn't bring in sort of the raw satellite signal. They need, in order for their tuner to be able to work, they need to be able to convert that and convert it into an intermediate frequency in order for it to be able to work properly. And so when the board looked at Thompson, it was easy for them to say, well, your intermediate frequency signal is an input RF signal, because they had defined the input RF signal so broadly as to encompass almost any RF signal you could imagine. And so as a result, when they looked at the intermediate frequency that actually goes into the Thompson circuitry, they said, well, it looks like it has frequency that fits within that range, and therefore it must be an input RF frequency. Our view is that that would be improper, because it is taking input RF frequency and giving it such an unreasonably broad definition that it's indistinguishable from any other RF frequency signal that would be out there, including every single one that would be listed in the 585 patent. There'd be absolutely no distinction, and there'd be no reason for the claim drafters to call something an input RF signal if it in fact was any signal, because they knew how to distinguish between the input signal and the intermediate signal.
Suppose you could have written your claim as receiving a signal from an antenna and then inputting said received signal into, you know, the converter to down convert to an intermediate signal. I mean, that would have been perhaps a clearer way of capturing the thought you're trying to capture now.
Perhaps. I mean, I think they did the best they could by using input RF signal consistently throughout the patent and giving examples of what they consider to be an input RF signal.
So they're just examples, aren't they? I mean, an RF signal is a term of art, isn't it?
So input RF signal is not a term of art.
Well, not input, but an RF signal is a term of art.
Oh, yes. And there's no dispute here that RF is a radio frequency signal. I mean, there's no dispute about that. It's just that in this patent, the inventors used the term input RF signal consistently, and they gave examples of what they considered it to be, and they have dependent claims that talk about what the source of it is. And so all of the intrinsic record supports the idea that we're talking about these terrestrial signals. I see that I'm...
It's your 2 minutes.
Okay. That they're taking this signal, and they're then going to be converting the signal. And so I think that consistency supports it, and I think the board recognized that consistency, although it decided to go with a dictionary-first definition for this term. Thank you.
Thanks. Mr. Ayers?
Ayers, Your Honor. Good morning, Judge Toronto. May it please the court. I think what we've heard in this case is that the patent owner in this case wants this court, as it did the board, to ascribe a unique definition to treat input RF signal as if it were a coined term, rather than just a concatenation of relatively well-known terms, input and RF signal.
Can you talk about the other side's argument that when you look at the claim, you're doing a claim construction of the claim, there's a term called intermediate signal in the claim, and then also an input RF signal, and so as a matter of claim construction, different words, different terms, they really ought to mean different things, and so there's some kind of misunderstanding to treat input RF signal and equate it with an intermediate frequency signal.
Yes, Your Honor. There's no inconsistency between the board's construction of RF input RF signal and the claims use of intermediate frequency. There was no separate dispute on the meaning of intermediate frequency or IF signal, and that largely was driven by some concurrent litigation. And so the patent owner never took a position in the case about what intermediate frequency signal means, but the the broadest reasonable interpretation of that in light of the specification is simply a signal with an intermediate frequency. And there's nothing inconsistent with saying that the input RF signal is a signal in the RF spectrum and that the intermediate frequency is a signal that has an intermediate frequency that differs from that signal. And in fact, it actually supports the board's construction because the tuner, the frequency conversion circuit that converts the input RF signal to the intermediate frequency is focused on the frequency, changing the frequency of that input signal to the intermediate frequency. So actually the claim language and the specification support the board's construction that input RF signal means a signal in an input signal that's in the RF spectrum. The specification clearly defines RF as radio frequency, and the board naturally just looked to the IEEE, a well-known dictionary, to see what that spectrum is. And there's no dispute that the spectrum that the board chose falls within the RF spectrum range. They could, you know, nibble around the edges and say it's broader, but it's immaterial to this dispute because Thompson clearly falls within the range that the board selected. This is not a case like, you know, Texas Digital or some of the others where the board just reached out and grabbed like Webster's Dictionary to find the broadest construction that it could. It went to a well-respected technical dictionary
Is the board's position, is this a fair, implication or set of consequences of the board's position? The board's claim construction here says there have to be three signals, one starting, one ending, or does it have to be ending, and something in the middle, or frequency change and intermediate. Yes, so there's a little window with three signals, signal in three shapes. And any set of circuits in which we can move that window around and find three, that would cover this, as long as they're doing the other things.
Well, I guess I would disagree slightly because clearly if the input signal was an X-ray signal, for example,
right,
which is outside the
RF, as long as within the quite broad range of frequencies.
So I guess I'm having a little trouble with your hypothetical, Your Honor. I want to be responsive to that. There has to be an input RF signal. It has to be a signal that's input that's in the RF spectrum. There has to be a circuit that converts the frequency of that signal to an intermediate frequency.
Something else, right?
And then some processing gets done and it produces baseband signals.
Right.
Okay, so
that's what
makes
what makes the middle one intermediate.
Yes,
it's actually
exactly.
Between two things.
Exactly. So there's nothing inconsistent with saying that the claim requires an intermediate frequency signal and an input signal that has a different range than that intermediate frequency. And you have to understand that there was a lot of context in this IPR you might imagine, and the petitioner put on evidence that it was well known in the art to use cable boxes, to use satellite boxes that would take what the patent refers to as a broadcast signal, and that's the signal that comes out of the medium, the original source that's transmitted. And I'll refer to the panel to column 1, line 23 through 26, where it says a television or video recorder includes a television signal receiver to receive terrestrial broadcast cable television or satellite broadcast television signal. So actually, the whole factual predicate to their argument that the patent universally uses the term input RF signals to mean a signal that originates from the source is actually wrong. The patent actually refers to that as a broadcast signal, as a transmitted signal. And And when it talks, and it's not surprising that the patent uses the term consistently input RF signal so much, because that's used in the claims 20 times. So it's not surprising that the same term is used, but it's not the term that refers to the broadcast signal. And I now I've lost your question, Your Honor. Well, I can circle back to that.
That's fine. No, it seems to what I keep thinking when I read this claim is it starts with receiving.
Yes.
And the receiving just means the starting point of what we are talking about.
Correct.
And that starting point could be, I'm imagining a set of circuits that has, I'm going to make up this number, 23,000 components.
Right.
And you could start that, the receiving at component number 17,000. As long as you, somewhere after that, had an intermediate and something else.
Correct.
And that's what I mean by moving this three-part window anywhere in the circuit.
Yes,
and they have a vision of something more discrete with a well-defined entry.
That's right, Your Honor.
And that's what it seems to me what the board has done is said, we're going to take this claim language literally. Receiving means starting anywhere. Anywhere at all, as long as we have the three pieces.
That's correct. That's what the claim says. And that's why it defines it as an input signal. It doesn't, it's not concerned about what happened upstream of that. And we actually put in evidence, and I would cite the panel to A2779, where petitioner's expert, Dr. Holbert, talks about how televisions were used in practice in the industry.
Yeah, but can I just double check to me? Can the RF signal come over a wire?
Yes, it can.
On the cable thing,
yeah,
for example. Okay.
Just
depends on the frequency.
Yes.
Okay.
But what's interesting, Your Honor, is that we hear from the patent owner that this signal can't be pre-processed, and yet it can be a satellite signal that goes apparently directly into the television. Well, that doesn't exist. And in fact, the patent itself makes clear, and this is the concern about relying on silence as a disclaimer and use that as a basis for lexicography. If you look to column 3 of the patent, beginning at line 46, it says, and this is talking about now the preferred embodiment, the television receiver 50 receives input RF signals such as those received on an antenna or a cable line on input terminal 52. Well, what's missing from there? A satellite. And you know why? Because a satellite requires pre-processing. It requires a satellite dish to receive that signal. Televisions don't receive satellite signals. And this is, if you look at A6217, there's a description of a typical, prior art, as was known in the art at the time, configuration of a television that was used as in conjunction with a satellite. But the signal that's input to the television, it basically spoofs the television receiver into thinking it's receiving a terrestrial broadcast signal by basically mapping that broadcast, the frequency of that broadcast signal, down to a frequency that it can process, it can recognize. But that doesn't mean that it's not an input RF signal, because that same input, as we all know, can be connected directly to an antenna. So if the signal coming off the antenna qualifies as an input RF signal, then certainly the signal that's coming out of the box that's input to that television also qualifies as an input RF signal. That's basically all that the board found. And there's evidence in the record to support that. I didn't hear anything about the other two grounds. I take that to mean that, or the other two issues, I take that to mean that the patent owner concedes that they waived those. And I would just, there was some briefing in the reply that they relied on Navajo Nation versus United States as sort of setting the framework for waiver. And I just want to point the court to In re Watts 354F3rd 1362, where this court said that it requires more than just putting the element at issue, that the patent owner has to make the factual argument that it's making on appeal to the board in order to develop that record. And in this case, the patent owner didn't make either the argument with respect to the plurality of the modulators or to the digital to analog converter. And so I would just like to point the board's or the panel's attention to their patent owner response with respect to the plurality of demodulators. And it's quite clear, this is on page A1078 of the appendix, their only argument before the board was that the digital demodulator only produced video output. It did not produce analog. Okay, they made no argument with respect to the analog demodulator at all. And now here on appeal, that's their only argument. And of course, the record now is silent as a result. And so they're seizing on that silence to try to actually misconstrue the court's claim construction. The court was quite clear that it was just clarifying its construction, that it was broad enough to embrace a single signal that encoded both video and audio. And that's why I used the permissive word may. And now on appeal, the patent owner is arguing that it must mean must. But the problem with that is that it's belied by its own specification. That would actually exclude the one and only embodiment that they described in their patent, which is an analog demodulator that produces both produces separate video and audio, which is exactly what Thompson described. The same is true on the digital to analog converter. The only argument that they made was that Kurth couldn't be combined because Kurth was prior art from a telephone and Thompson related to a television. And because of the speeds that were involved, it wouldn't be possible to combine that. And that's at A1099 through 1-1. Now they're making a completely separate argument that I guess it's a little bit hard to understand, but basically that the digital to analog, that you have to demodulate the digital to analog converter or the digital signal. Again, the combination that the board relied upon is exactly the same combination that's described in column 5, line 54 through 58, which is a digital to analog converter that's interposed between the digital signal processor and an analog demodulator. So again, even if the panel finds that it hasn't been waived, it's just wrong on the facts. And unless there's any other questions, I'll see my time.
Thank you very much. Mr. Smith, 2 minutes.
Thank you.
With regard to the input RF signal, I think it's important to remember that nothing in the claims, in the specification, or anywhere else in the record except for the dictionary definition and the arguments that we've heard talks about construing the RF and the input RF signal as the frequency range, meaning the patent doesn't talk about a frequency range for the input RF signal. And so the starting point for the board's construction was looking at a dictionary definition and taking that dictionary definition, which is extraordinarily broad, and it even says in the dictionary, it says it's roughly this huge range of frequencies, and saying that's the starting point for our conclusion that the input RF signal is this broad construction that can include any of these RF frequencies. We submit that that's the wrong starting place. The starting place should be looking at the intrinsic record, looking at what the intrinsic record teaches us about the input RF signal. And I think you've heard some arguments that I would disagree with regard to the idea that it can't be a broadcast signal. The dependent claims specifically call out broadcast signals as being input RF signals. And so those are explicitly stated as being input RF signals within the patent itself. Just the way the specification calls out and specifically indicates that the input RF signal has terrestrial signals, can have the cable signals to it, And the only way to reconcile these terms, the input RF signal and the intermediate signal in these claims, is to have a construction where they're not the same. And the board's construction, the way it is articulated, would include not only the IF signal within the claim, but every other signal that's described throughout the entire patent, because the broad construction that they've given would cover any signal. And so it would mean any signal can come into this when that is not what the patentee was trying to accomplish, meaning that the advantages that the patentee articulates is this idea that you can bring in these terrestrial signals and then do the conversion, which is different, very different from what Thompson is saying. Thompson is actually saying, we can't do that. We're not able to bring it in, and we need to have something external to our system that can make this conversion and then be able to filter it. I see that I'm out of time.
Thank you very much. Thanks, both counsel. The case is submitted.